Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I can't believe I'm old enough to say this, but I've been a career counselor for 26 years now. I've had 3,900 clients. And with me in the studio is that one of those 3,900 clients who, for me, is the most memorable. She's going to tell us her story with career lessons for all of us and some surprises that I think you were not going to expect on Work with Marty Nemko, but we'll do that just like they do on CNN, you know, cause straight ahead after the break. Yeah, so there'll be surprises. Anyways, let me, without further ado, let me introduce Jeffrey Givens. Jeffrey Givens, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty. It's nice to be here today.
Good. So now, you have always been very, very shy. What's your earliest memory of being, when you were as a kid, recognizing that you were very shy?
I think the first time I can remember was when I was 7 years old. I was in second grade, and the teacher wanted us to be part of this school-wide spelling bee. And I was a good speller, so I knew the teacher would want me to be a part of it. But the thought of being, you know, this one person in front of hundreds of kids, maybe thousands of kids, scared me to death. I didn't want to do it. So I tried to get myself out of it. And then I happened to remember that I could make myself throw up. I discovered it a few weeks before by sticking my finger in my throat. And I wasn't trying to make myself sick. I was trying to touch that thing in the back of the throat, the uvula. And lo and behold, stuff came up. So I did that again and made myself sick. My mother didn't know what was happening, but I stayed home the next day and didn't be in the spelling bee, and I was a lot happier.
That's pretty shy. I mean, most kids would, you know, you had a good skill, you were a good speller, you would have really wanted to compete, but because you were so shy, not only did you not want to compete, but you even made yourself vomit so that you didn't have to compete. So you had that kind of going against you. You grew up in East Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw you showed me a photo of the place. And it's really, you know, if anybody thinks of it described as a very, very, let's just use the word basic, little apartment, would you say that's a fair description of it?
Yes. So very basic. There's no other word for that.
Bars on the windows, you know, part of a very...
Yeah, kind of a typical
building.
East Oakland place.
Yeah,
at least I think.
I think I've been in a lot of East Oakland places, or you know, I've seen a lot of them, and it's like a cinder block, right? It was a rectangle, just plain old gray cinder block with security doors. Half a story didn't even look like a full story. It looked very low and with the bars and all that. So, certainly didn't come from with a silver spoon in your mouth.
Hardly.
And you were very shy, and also. You never quite fit in because while you're black and you look, you know, your skin is certainly dark. You're not just a light skin black. You're a dark skin black with very black, you know, very black person's hair.
Right.
You never seemed, and you grew up in East Oakland, you never sounded, you didn't have the stereotypical black accent, if you will.
No, and I'm not sure why I developed the voice I developed. It just never came about. I mean, I was around, you know, the typical black accent, as you call it, you know, all the time. That's all I heard. But for whatever reason, I just didn't develop it myself. To this day, I'm not sure why.
And that caused you not to fit. You were telling me about an incident with your cousin when you were about to start a new school in the same school as your cousin. And she she had a conversation with you. Tell us about that.
This was the summer I was going to start junior high school, and my cousin, we used to be very close, she and I, but she discovered that I had this this problem that I was not sounding like her and like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So she said to me something like this: "What the hell are you doing? You
talking like that. You always talk like this. You always acting like a little white girl down the street. You can't do that. You got to be walking like me. You got to be talking like me. Or you sure as hell ain't going to be going to school with me. And as you may have guessed, it didn't really work because I still talk like this. And because of that, the first day of school, she shooed me away, like actually put her hand up and shooed me away.
And so you certainly didn't feel like you fit in with the black kids. Did you feel you could fit in with the white kids, or just because you were
you? I couldn't fit in with anybody at my school.
So at the risk of asking an obvious question, honestly, how did that make you feel?
It made me feel alone, like I had nobody to relate to. And by that time, my sisters had moved out, but I couldn't relate to them much either, but they were a lot older. I didn't fit in with the rest of my family. I just felt alone a lot of the time.
So you were very shy by nature, so shy that you would vomit so you didn't have to appear in a spelling bee. Mm-hmm. You were caught between the two races, between whites and blacks.
Yep.
And you were a large woman. You know. So you were, essentially, you were big black, but not quite black enough to fit in, and shy.
Yeah. Sticking out like the proverbial sore thumb.
And then, because you were smart, you got into Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was my saving grace, that I had schoolwork to focus on.
Hmm. And so then in Berkeley, of course, you're away from home. Was that the first time you were really away from home for...
Yes.
And so now there's 30,000 kids there. And were you feeling really shy and, like, not fit in? I mean, what was it like going to Berkeley for you?
When I went there, I hoped that because there were so many kids there, I hoped that there would be some place that I would fit in. But it still wasn't the case. Even on the first day, it seemed like they just all knew each other. They were all friends already. And I still just didn't get it.
So what did you do? I mean, here was supposed to be like the brightest horizon, the opening for your life, coming out of the ghetto, and there you are at Berkeley, and yet there you are, and there's all these kids, and they all seem to be getting along and everything, and there you are, still feeling isolated and alone. What did you do?
I wanted to find out what was wrong with me, because I'm just that kind of a person, so I took a personality test, the Myers-Briggs test. I didn't know what it was at the time. And one of the scales they judge you on is introvert and extrovert, and I scored almost off the charts on introvert. And I didn't know
surprise.
What that word meant.
Uh-huh.
So when I looked it up, I found out what it meant, and I thought, yeah, that's who I am. But even though now I knew the word for what I was, it didn't really make my life any better. I mean, still, nobody knew who I was.
Mm-hmm. This is maybe a good time for me to introduce. Let me, first of all, let our listeners know, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Jeffrey Gibbons. My most inspirational client that I've ever had, and I can't help but give away the punchline. She's become my best friend. So in any case, she came to me, and as a career counselor later on, and She immediately demonstrated how shy she was. And like I do with every client, I try to find something that's the most positive. Where can I move forward with her? Where is the position of strength that she's got? And the one thing she said is she likes to sing. And so I asked her to sing for me. I'm going to have her sing. I brought my little keyboard with me here. And I'm not going to have her sing the song she sang. I think you sang Somewhere from West Side Story for me, I think.
Yes, that's right.
But I think this song, No One Knows Who I Am. You just sang No One Knows Who I Am. I don't know who I am. I thought maybe that would be an appropriate song to sing for our listeners.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Look at me and tell me who I am, why I am, what I am. Call me a fool, and it's true I am. I don't know. It's such a
shame. I'm such a sham. No one knows who.
Jeffrey Givens, thank you. That was fabulous.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for the compliment.
Yeah. Okay. So, once I got the notion that that singing was a strength, but you were, frankly, you were singing as shy as you sang pretty, prettily, but you you were very stiff as a stiff. There were cadavers that were less stiff when you were singing.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. But we decided that the very what was going to innate you were making $8 an hour at that point, even though you had a degree from Berkeley. You were you were working for $8 an hour selling sheet music at Tupper and Reed in Berkeley.
Yes.
And so I felt that, you know, and dear listeners, this is true of everybody. You got to start with somebody's strength. So I said, given that she was that shy, I knew that she was probably going to be relegated to low level work until we could get her to be a little more engaging in interviews and then on the job, so she would create a few relationships, so she wasn't just, these days it's so unfortunate, but it is as much who you know as what you know.
Thanks.
So I decided to try to get her a little less shy through music. And why don't you tell the story of what I did?
Well, you had me watch some YouTube videos, which I thought was a little strange, because, well, career counselors are just supposed to talk all the time, right? But you had us watch some videos, and there were these singers doing these amazing performances. There was Queen Latifah, I remember watching, and Barbara Streisand, and Kristen Chenoweth, who's on Broadway all the time. And then you took me to this room where you do your acting coaching, because you're also a director. And then you said, all right, so you saw those videos, right? What you're going to do is you're going to emulate them. You're going to be big. You're going to be larger than life. You're going to be freaking amazing. And you're not coming out of this room till you are.
No, I didn't say freaking. I said something
else. Yeah, she says something else that we cannot say on the air.
That's right.
And then you closed the door, and I was wondering, what have I gotten myself into? But still, I gave it a shot, and I guess it worked because it seemed like I was looser and you were satisfied with what you saw.
And then what did I do? This was ridiculous that I did this.
Well, after the career counseling session, you offered me a ride home because I don't have a car. However, you didn't drive me home. You got on the freeway, which you do not need to do to get to my apartment. And I told you that. I said, where the hell are you taking me? And you just gave me this kind of evil little grin that I now recognize all the time. And you said, you'll see. And we ended up in the middle of a forest. And I didn't know Oakland had forests. And when we got there, I saw this theater. It was this huge outdoor theater. It had like 2,000 seats, this gigantic, bigger than Broadway stage. And then in all seriousness, you pointed at that stage and you said, one day you're going to perform on that stage.
And then what happened?
I looked at you like you were nuts.
Right. You but still do that, you know.
Yes, I still do. I looked home and looked up this place, which is called the Woodminster Amphitheater. And it's here. It's in Oakland. And I didn't know it was there. I'd lived in Oakland for years. I looked it up, saw all the shows that they did, you know, all these musicals, you know, all the musicals everybody knows. And I noticed that they were having auditions that Saturday. I tried to put it out of my mind, but unfortunately, you had planted a seed, and I couldn't get it out of my mind. So I forced myself to go to auditions just to get the little voice out of my head, if nothing else. And, you know, I was there. You know, I was scared out of my mind. It was my first audition ever, and, you know, I was on that stage. It's so much bigger when you're actually standing on the stage. And then out in the audience, just like in the movies, there were these people that were judging my performance, making this situation that much scarier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I sang the best that I could. And right afterwards, also like in the movies, the people in the audience said, thank you, next, and sent me home. And a few days later, I got an email. And it was from the people at Woodminster. I'm expecting a form letter saying, thank you for your audition. We saw lots of talented people, and we decided to go with other people, but thank you for your time. We hope to see you next year. And so I'm thinking it's going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I accepted that, I clicked it open, and it said, we would like you to perform with us this summer. What? That wasn't what I was expecting. So I read it again, and it still said that. And because of that, I had gone with just one click, really, from not having heard of this place a week before to being one of their performers.
And getting paid.
And getting paid for it. That's right.
And I'm going to ask you what show it was. I'm going to have you sing a song from that. But honestly, my whole strategy behind this was to help loosen you up for interviews and work on the job. To what extent did rehearsing for that show that you were cast in actually help you loosen up in real life, or maybe even the interactions with the fellow actors? To what extent did it actually help or not regarding your work life?
I think it helped my work life because the people at work knew that I had a life outside of just doing what I did, and it was a side that they didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, really? You sing? You sing in musicals? They couldn't believe it.
They put
and
a human
some people
voice.
Wanted to just go see it.
Yeah, they put a human voice. I mean, there you were, this very quiet person, this big black person who was sitting there quietly, not really interacting with many people at work, and it put a human face on you that you were, that you had this other side.
Yeah, and people seemed interested, and to this day, there are people who are asking what shows I'm doing next because of that one show.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should also say, I mean, you were, when we started this little escapade, you were making, as we said, $8 an hour working at Tupper and Reed selling sheet music.
Yes.
What are you doing now? What are you doing now, and to what extent do you believe that our little exercise was contributory to you doing what you're doing now?
Well, right now I'm a database administrator at Children's Hospital, the Children's Hospital Foundation. That's the fundraising section. And I think it helped because when I went into that interview, I put on my best. I was the best person I could be. I was really engaging, and the people there, they really liked me. And also when I had my first interview, that was my first one, when I had my phone interview, I really knew how to sell myself on my skills. Even though I had never been in fundraising before, I knew what I needed to apply. And as a result, they were interested and wanted to know more about me.
Dear listeners, again, now you may or may not be a performer, but if you are worrying about why your career is not doing as well as it should, it's a bit corny, but I don't think there's a more vivid example than Jeffrey Givens here. Find something. I don't care if you're a depressive who is curled up in bed with a joint or a bottle of vodka and everything is terrible. The way out is with a strength. I don't think you have to be world class at anything, but relative to your strengths and weaknesses, what is your best strength? Whatever it is, it could be a way of talking with people. It could be something with your hands. It could be a business sense. It could be anything. It could be recreational. Start with that and ask yourself how making that flower, nurturing that, could help start the positive momentum so that you can then make more progress career-wise. So now, back to the show. Again, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with the most memorable of my career counseling clients ever. Very special person to me now. Her name is Jeffrey Givens. And we started out talking about how somebody who had a lot of things against her, growing up in East Oakland, I won't bore you with the details of the broken home, she was big, she was black, and she was painfully shy, so much so that she vomited to avoid having to be, intentionally vomited, avoid having to be in a spelling bee, even though she was a great speller. And so now we've moved the story forward and showing how we're using music as her way to unlock. And so she did get cast in a play called Brigadoon. And why don't you tell us about that and then lead that to introducing the song?
Well, if you have not seen Brigadoon, it takes place in an 18th century Scottish village, and I was cast as one of the 18th century Scottish villagers.
Only in Oakland.
Only in Oakland. And Brigadoon features music such as the following.
Okay. You mean Brigadoon.
Oh, sorry. Brigadoon features music such as the following.
Okay. Let me get this together here. Okay.
The mists of May are in the gloaming, and all the clouds are holding still. So take my hand and let's go roaming through the heather on the hill.
Very Scottish. Okay.
Thank you.
And then you were in another show after... believe that, you know, you were shocked, I understand. You told me that you were worried because you were so shy and everything that they would ever have you back, but they didn't. They had you back in Finian's Rainbow again.
Yes.
Another real black play, Finian's Rainbow. What's that about?
It features leprechauns and love stories and a racist white senator who magically turns into a black gospel singer. There's a song in the middle of Act 1 of that show, and it's called Necessity. The ladies of the town are picking tobacco leaves, and some of them are dreaming of going to places like New York City and Hollywood. And there's
typical career goals, you know, big Hollywood, exciting career kind of goals. You know.
Yeah, besides picking tobacco.
Right.
But there's one woman of the town who reminds them why they cannot do that.
And can you want to sing that song? Can you do that?
Sure.
Okay.
I think I can do it. What is the curse that makes the universe so old? Bewildering. What is the hoax that just provokes the folks they call God's children? What is the jinx that gives a bunny and his brother and everyone around the run around? Necessity, necessity, that most unnecessary thing, necessity, what throws the monkey wrench in a fella's good intentions, that nasty old invention, necessity, my feet. Says your rent ain't paid. Necessity, so plain to see. What a lovely old world this silly old world could be. There's nothing lower than less, unless it's nothing lower unless it's lower than less, unless it's necessity.
Jeffrey Givens. That's great. Love
Thank
it.
You.
Just love it. Okay. So, now, one of the things that's, I think what I want to do is maybe I want to, no, I want to ask you about work now.
Okay.
And working, we have, now you and I have worked now on a one-woman show. We've created a one-woman show for you. And so you and I have worked very closely. It's a true work situation. We've been rehearsing every night for quite a while.
Yes, we have.
What lessons, career lessons, would you say you have learned that might be helpful to our listeners from having worked with me on this very intense project?
Well, I think one lesson is don't be afraid to start. This was something that I was not sure that I wanted to do, but eventually I decided to go for it. Another thing is just get everything out that you want to get out. Some of it's going to be good. Some of it's going to be crap, and you have to just trash
it. So experiment, try a first draft, and keep revising your way to excellence rather than try to wait until something perfect comes into your mind before trying it.
Yes, that's a better way of saying it. Just start with a first draft. No matter how rough it is, just get one.
Isn't it? If there's a model about how we work, whether it be every story or every song, we say, let's just do it. Let's just do it. We're in experimental mode, and we'll keep redoing it. Experiment. We'll repeat again and again and again, and little by little it gets better and better. Is that right?
Yes, and sometimes it gets better, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it gets better, but we still decide to change it. And even now, I think sometimes we're in experimental mode.
That's
still.
Right. Oh, absolutely. We continue. We did a performance of it yesterday, and we have like 10 things we're going to do, and it was pretty darn polished. I mean, the people you know, said it was really very, very, very professional, and yet still we continue to see. And it's fun because we keep seeing new ways to improve it. We're obsessed with trying to make it better.
Yes, we are.
Okay, one more. Any other lesson about how has your work style changed? In general, now your day job is your database administrator and assistant prospect researcher and all those things at Children's Hospital Foundation.
Right.
How has your way of approaching work or working changed as the result of either the career counseling teaching you to be an actor and a big performer, not just an actor, but a real performer, or from working with me on this one-woman show?
I think it's changed because I've been, willing to try a variety of different things. Before, I just kind of wanted to stick to my job, but I've also have taken on other projects every now and again. Sometimes they're writing projects, sometimes they're research projects, which is what I eventually want to do at Children's Hospital. And before, I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to try other things and not just have the same job.
I want to talk. You and I are having a current problem we are facing. We've decided to change the words of the song For Good from Wicked to make four of the lines reflect the play rather than just be the words that are as beautiful as the song is and how appropriate the words are. We wanted to change four of the lines. And we're having a bit of a struggle with that. Let's tell about the struggle and see if there are career lessons that are embedded in that.
I think the struggle that we're having is you believe that the four lines should be reflective of the stories and songs that we've put into the show. And I think that that's not necessarily the case because the song is supposed to be our friendship and how it's grown. I think if I've learned anything from that is that it's okay to disagree. And sometimes one side wins, sometimes the other side wins, and sometimes you compromise and meet in the middle. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but whatever way it's going to turn out, I think it's going to turn out well.
And I would agree with that, and I would take it one step further. There has to be a sense of trust that we can disagree with respect. It's never done cruelly.
Right? That's right.
But we can respectfully, and a sign of respect is to be able to openly but tactfully disagree.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And even, argue back and forth, but knowing we are going to continue to be friends no
Absolutely.
Matter what the fight is. And
yes.
It's true in the work situation, too. If you're a boss, I would encourage you to create a climate where you encourage your people to express tactfully. And sometimes that means in private, not in a public meeting, for example. And, you know, very often that's a bad thing for an employee to do, to embarrass the boss in public.
Yes.
To tactfully or privately encourage in thoughtful disagreement and even the feisty exchange of ideas, even with the boss, and a tacit agreement that will never get you fired and it will never get you on my crap list. It is because at minimum it's well-intentioned, what you're proposing, and mm-hmm. at maximum it's great. And the feisty exchange of ideas, the honest exchange of ideas, is often the basis on which better ideas and better solutions come. Does that sound fair?
That does sound fair. And that actually is something that is happening, at least with my day job situation now, is that I do have a boss who is open to ideas. She doesn't always accept them, but sometimes she does. And that was something that, in past experiences, was not always the case. And also, as far as disagreements goes, that's something that I have always tried to do, is be tactful with it, because obviously I don't want to get fired, of course, but I also don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to embarrass the other person either.
Yeah. One other thing. So much in work and in personal life, people put aside what is really best for the project in favor of what their egos get in the way. And I think it's fair to say that you and I have really been very careful to use only one decision rule about what goes into this play, this one-woman show, and that is what's best for the show. It's not my ego. It's not your ego. It's not who's right, who's getting his way. It's only about what is going to most entertain and inspire our listeners. Is that fair, our viewers?
I would say that's fair. We have not always agreed about what we think might be entertaining, but we have agreed that whatever it is, it should be the most entertaining.
The garter thing, for example.
Yes, we are still working out the kinks on the garter belt.
Yeah, not the garter. Yes, we will work that out. Okay. Anyway, okay. So what I think I'd like to do is I would like to have you sing. Well, let me say, do it this way. Despite all of our efforts to try to get you to be more outgoing and whatever, and deal with just change somewhat to conform to the world so you're not just stuck out there by yourself, you told me that, why don't you explain what you feel you're going to always be?
I'm still the kind of person who'd rather stay home than go to a party. No, I've been invited. I'd just rather be at home. And I still get nervous when I perform for people. And I am still beginning to accept the likelihood that I'll always be, as you said earlier, big, black, and shy.
And I guess there's if there is ever a song that would be emblematic of that, it's really kind of a gay anthem from Lakaja Fol, I Am Who I Am. You want to sing that for us?
Sure.
I'm going to start a cappella.
I am what I am. I am my own special creation. So come take a look. Give me the hook or the ovation. It's my world that I want to take a little pride in. My world, and it's not a place I have to hide in. Life's not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am what I am. I am what I am. I don't want praise. I don't want pity. I bang my own drum. Something it's noise, I think it's pretty. And so what if my identity's a tangle? Why not try to see things from a different angle? Your life is a sham till you can shout out loud, I am what I am. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses. I deal my own deck, sometimes the ace, sometimes the deuces. It's my life and there's no return and no deposit. My life, and it's time to work and time to cause it. Life not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am what I am.
Jeffrey Gibbons.
Thank you.
Now, I'd like to go to the phones. If you've been listening to Jeffrey Gibbons tell her story of how she went from being a big, black, shy, poor person from East Oakland who vomited at age 7 to avoid having to be on stage in a spelling bee, to someone who I am biased, who I believe is a superstar in the making, and who's now, who was making $8 an hour in retail and now making a solid middle-class living in Children's Hospital. If you have any questions about her or comments, we invite you to call. Here at Work with Marty Nemko and Jeffrey Gibbons, the phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we're waiting for calls to come in, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners that relate to your lessons you've learned in career, either from our work, our career counseling together, from my mentorship, you know, with regard to general, or that working with you on this one-woman show, anything you've got you want to share lessons-wise, or lessons learned at Children's Hospital and working?
I'm at a place today that I never ever thought I would be. If there are any people who are listening right now who want to try something and they think that for whatever reason they're too whatever, you know, maybe they think they're too young, they're too old, they're too big, too little, too black, too white, whatever. Try it anyway, because you never know where you might end up.
Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko with Jeffrey Gibbons. It is your turn on the air.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm calling from Castro Valley, and I just wanted to say that your voice was so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And it was really inspirational. So
thank you very much.
I appreciate that. That's all I have to say. Have a great day.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Good luck in everything.
Thank you. All our lines are lighted up, so let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, Jeffrey Gibbons. What's your question or comment for Jeffrey?
Hi. You know, I'm just wondering what allowed you or motivated you to seek out Marty Nemko in the first place, and why him?
I listened to a show. I used to listen to this years ago.
But what allowed, since you were so shy, that seems like quite a step to have done it.
It was something that I had to push myself to do, because I didn't know what Marty was going to be like in person. But I needed a big change. The music store I was working for had actually closed, and I needed a new direction. And I decided to give Marty a shot. I liked to listen to him on the radio. I used to read his column when he had one in the Chronicle. And I thought, well, maybe I'll give it a shot, see what he's like.
Okay.
Maybe he can help him.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, Jeffrey Gibbons. What's your question or comment for Jeffrey?
Oh, I'm a musician, and I have a problem with shyness, but I am so glad that I've heard her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Her sing,
mm-hmm.
She is world class.
I know.
She is She has touched my heart. I've got goosebumps all over from her singing.
Oh.
It is just out of this world.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the comment.
Would you like to ask her a question about getting past your shyness? Because she was really, really shy. What would you like, if anything, would you like to ask her?
When I was so shy, I play saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
People invited me to come to a club to play, and I was so nervous, I couldn't make my fingers work.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like rigor mortis set in.
God.
And in a practice room at Laney College, I could play everything I wanted, but when I got in front of people, it just, I guess my nervousness just took over.
Paralyzed you. Jeffrey, do you have any advice as to how you actually manage to stay calm or get calm enough so that you don't get rigor mortis or rigor voices or rigor larynxis when you get on stage?
Something that's worked for me for a while is knowing that I have that nervous energy, so I try to work it off somehow. I try maybe doing some exercises, running in place or something like that, and sometimes that gets rid of some of the nervous energy. Also, I try to remember that while something that I love to do is performing, it's also not the end of the world if you mess up.
Mm-hmm.
Usually those two things help me a little bit.
You know, Jeffrey, yesterday before the performance, you got in my car. You still don't drive. I picked you up, and I saw how nervous you were immediately. I said, and so you went from there, and you did your usual showstopper performance. You were amazing yesterday. So how did you walk us through and walk our caller through what you, or maybe we did, to get you from quite nervous to where you were able to completely let it all hang out on the stage?
Well, yesterday I did not have time to work off the nervous energy. So it was actually your pep talk. Just saying, make sure you leave it all out there on the stage. And remember, it's not the end of the world, as I was saying earlier. And do your best and have fun. That's something you always say, is have fun.
I also said something else which is important. And it was true. I said, as wonderful and great as Woodminster is, you belong. There were big shots from Woodminster at the performance yesterday.
Yes.
I said, you are fully deserving of being among them, even at the highest levels. They should not intimidate you. You are not just a wannabe. You belong there. And that you ultimately are responsible not to pleasing them, but to pleasing yourself and your standards as the superstar in the making. Don't worry about what they're thinking. Honor your own self. Perform for yourself. Was that helpful?
Actually, that was helpful. Yes.
Okay. Hopefully that's helpful to you, dear.
She's already a superstar.
I know. She is. We just have to get the venues are going to get bigger and bigger, I really believe. So anyway, thank you for your call. Hopefully that was helpful. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with Jeffrey Givens. What's your question or comment for her?
Hi, me? Martha?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, it's not a question, it's just a comment, but that is the most incredible program any place, anywhere I've ever heard. I'm in tears with wishing I had heard that 50 years ago, 40 years ago. Glad I heard it now. And then also, of course, I want to know, where can I hear Jeffrey Givens?
Why don't I tell you about that? I care about my KELW listeners. I've been with you guys for 24 years now. We're going to be doing a special free performance of it for you, our KELW listeners, will get first crack. There are 22. I'm going to do it in my home. And I'm going to do it on April 22nd, right after tax time is over and I get the stupid taxes done with. On April 22nd, Sunday, it's a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And if you, dear caller, and any KELW listeners will get first crack. I have not announced this to anybody else. You can search this on the internet. You will see there's no mention of it anywhere. If you will email me, I will send you an invite. I need to keep track of numbers, so because, like I said, there's only 22 seats in my house. It will be free. It will be April 22nd. And so my email address is mnemko, that's M-N-E-M-K-O, at comcast.net. The first, and you can bring a guest. So, no, but up to, one guest. So if you email me, let me know if you want one or two of those slots. And if the first 20, it's first come, first serve, the first 22 slots that go in. And again, it's free. And probably in honor of Jeffrey, we'll even serve champagne. Just email me that, and you will get to see Jeffrey Gibbons in a very intimate environment and see her really up close and personal. There's nothing like an intimate environment for a show rather than the huge places like, you know, the huge 1,000-seat theaters. So not that it isn't wonderful to see something at Woodminster, absolutely. But anyway, that's what how do you feel about that?
Took my breath away after having my socks knocked off. Thank you both. So.
Okay, and thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jeffrey, and Work with Marty Nemko. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, Jeffrey Gibbons. What's your question or comment for Jeffrey?
Hi, is that me?
It is.
Oh, her voice is absolutely fantastic.
I know.
And this is, I agree, a marvelous program,
thank
Marty,
you.
And a tribute to you. I'm 85 years old, and just awake now to this factor in myself as well. I'm also an introvert, I see, and but in fact, I'm not shy, but rather dismissive. But this is a marvelous, marvelous program, and I think you have a fantastic future.
Yes, Jay,
thank
she
you
does.
Very much.
I know it. I bet she's 36. I would give anything to be 36. She is. I wish she had started this when she was 8, like some kids with these chats, but 36, thank God, she's 36 and not 66. She's got a life ahead of her.
Yeah, marvelous.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm 25. But anyway, she's wonderful, wonderful. Thank you.
And one question for you.
You.
You know, you've kind of implied she's inspirational to you. I don't care if you're 85 or 95.
I agree.
What one thing perhaps has Jeffrey's interview and performance inspired you to do differently today or tomorrow? Anything that could actually affect your life?
Well, I'm restarting, actually. No, I have for rather the past year doing quite a lot of mathematics. I'm from an academic background, and really I'm returning to activity. It seems to me that I can create as much as I did in earlier years.
Well, may you create as much as Jeffrey is going to create.
Well, she just has a fantastic and beautiful future and has so much to offer the world.
I know. Uh-huh. All right. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's take one more call, and then we're going to end with something that I've been looking forward to. So, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, Jeffrey Givens. What's your question or comment for Jeffrey?
Is this me, Marty?
It is.
All right. This is Dale Scott. How are you?
Oh, Dale the fireman. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Nice to hear. It's been years, but I do remember you.
But I listen pretty regularly.
Good.
And hi to Jeffrey as well.
Good morning.
I just have a comment that, you know, of course, that I taught disaster preparedness to neighborhood groups and, for lack of a better term, civilians. Mm-hmm. And I was able to overcome shyness because I really believed in what I was doing, and I was able to overcome any reservation because I knew I was making a positive difference.
Yeah, believe it.
If I was selling vacuum cleaners, I'd be a mess.
What if you were selling a good, you know, vacuum cleaners may be mundane, but if you were selling a good quality vacuum cleaner at a fair price, would that not be motivating?
If I believed in it, I'd be behind it. There's
exactly.
No question. But I just want to say that believing in what you are doing, what you're selling, and, you know, if you're selling your music, you're singing, you're selling yourself, believing in yourself is the best way to overcome any kind of shyness. And I'll finish with one last thing. The only thing missing from that last song was the sound of a standing ovation.
Thank you very much, Dale.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
Jeffrey, we talk about believing in the product. I got to tell you what the product, you know, I told you, I can't sleep at night. I'm thinking about how to make this thing better. Because, you know, the product I believe in is, it's not just your singing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just your storytelling. It is the lessons that are so embedded about what you can do, despite the odds, if you really stay focused.
That's really something that you said at our first career counseling meeting, that a lot of things can be overcome with focus.
Focus is the most important word. You have to have talent. If you couldn't sing and you couldn't tell a story reasonably well, and again, some of this was developed, but the singing voice, as somebody who went to one of your shows said, you are an instrument of God's, you know, what if, you know, whether you, right, your voice was an instrument of God or something. You know, if you didn't have the talent, you know, I try to sing, I can't sing worth squat. I don't have it. But with talent plus focus and luck, that's the formula. Is that right?
I think that is correct, yes.
Okay. I want to end this, this frankly wonderful for me too, experience that we've had. You had told me you wanted to give me a gift.
Yes, and if anybody who's listening knows Marty personally, you know that he's impossible to shop for because he doesn't like material stuff. He just doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But he does like music. So I had discovered this song a while ago that I had wanted to sing to you. And if it's okay with you and your listeners, I'd like to sing it to you now.
And I can't think of a song that's more appropriate for, you know, relationship between a counselor, a career counselor or whatever, and their client or friends, or a really, truly loving relationship between boss and coworker. So there's hopefully lessons in these words that are embedded for all of us.
I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most to grow if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better, but because I knew you. I have been changed for good.
It well may be that we may never meet again in this lifetime. So let me say before we part, so much of me is made of what I've learned from you. You'll be with me like a handprint on my heart. And now, whatever way our stories may end, I know that you've rewritten mine by being my friend. Like a ship blown from its mooring by a wind off the sea, like a seed dropped by a skybird in a distant wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better, but
Because I knew you.
Because I knew you.
I have been changed for good. And just to clear the air, I ask forgiveness for the things you blame me for.
But then I guess we know there's blame to share.
And none of it seems to matter anymore. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes the
sun. By a wind off the sea.
Like a stream that meets
a
boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better? I do believe I have been changed for the better. Because I knew you.
Because I knew you. I have been changed
for good.
Jeffrey Gibbons, thank you so much for singing it for me, and I love joining you a little bit. It says a lot to me.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I meant every word of it, too.
Thank you. And I do mean also that thank you so much, Jeffrey, for putting yourself out there, being on this show. I really appreciate you coming to work with Marty Nemko.
Not the easiest thing in the world to do, but I'm glad to do it.
And clearly the callers find great inspiration in you, and you know, I, to be honest, I really wasn't planning on making it free, but I just somehow felt moved to make it free for the KLW listeners. So I'll repeat again what we're going to do. I'm going to invite you, my dear listeners. You don't have to donate to KLW. There's none of this. This is just to do it. If you would like to hear a full two-hour show of Jeffrey doing her amazing show, Big, Black, and Shy, we will do a performance at my house on April 22nd. It's a Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. And there are only, my room, my living room only seats 22 people. So if you want to come, just, it's first come, first serve, just email me and I will send you an invitation with details. My email address is mnemko@comcast.net. That's mnemko@comcast.net. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers. And Peter Diamandis founded the X Prize, which awards up to $10 million for a solution to a societal problem. He's received countless proposals and synthesized what he's learned in a new book called Abundance. The future is better than you think. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.